We'll go ahead and bring up our next speaker, and we'll continue the search for the tradition. Can we welcome R to the podium? And R is going to read on or share on self-seeking will go away.
Hello, everybody. My name is R. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. And
hey, R.
Hi.
I is R.
I've been asked to read the spelling on that is A-H-R. Is it off or on or what? Oh, that's very nice. Carla, thank you very much. Am I hearable?
No.
Wow.
You can hear that.
You know, this recovery stuff, this serenity, I'm so laid back that... Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my name is R. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater.
And, hi, R.
Hi, everybody. And Deanna, thank you so much for asking me to share tonight. Let me give you a little snapshot of what it was like first. In 1985, I was temporarily in Atlanta, Georgia, and someone said, hey, let's go to Six Flags Magic Mountain. So we went out there, and we're doing rides. And we got on this ride that was called a gondola, and it was shaped like a boat. It was rather large. It held 80, 100, 125 people, and it would go back and forth like this, and back and forth. And we were, the rows were very close to one another, and they locked us in with two kind of bars, one that was over our legs and one that came down over our heads, because this thing was going back and forth like this and back and forth, and then all the way 360 and all the way 360 and like that. And okay, I'm willing to do that, but you know, part of my recovery is that I've given away like 8 inches from around my waist, and so I had a lot of girth. And when I got all the way up like this, one of the braces broke away. And yes, I was pretty nervous about that. I was afraid, you know. And I just hung on and braced myself, and everything was A-okay. You know, I mean, obviously I'm here now, but... you know, they talk about this being a slow disease, slow to, you know, knock us off, but that could have been rather abrupt, to say the least. So I love the promises, and they all, to me, they just interlink, that one bounces off the other, and they... You know, they're playful with one another, as I see it. So I'm working my steps very slowly, and one of my character defects is grandiosity. You know, I'll flit off into some fantasy about something or other to sort of escape. And it also comes up for me in another way, because... one of the people that I wanted to make amends to was my ex-wife. And my grandiosity came up in like this. I figured that it didn't work, right? And I also figured that it was all my fault, every bit of it. I could go into details that would bore you, but I just thought it was my fault. So she had remarried and was living elsewhere in the country. And so I got to step eight, and I had become willing to make amends to her very slowly, because for me it was sort of like whose fault is it? Duh, my fault, you know? But I figured there would be a benefit for her to hear that. So I wrote her a letter, and rather than contacting her, you know, by phone, and I just sent it off. And in the letter I said, hey, you know, next time you're in town, I'd like to talk to you about some amends. And I thought that there was a good reason why she would come to town, so it wasn't like just an offer, an empty offer. So I get this letter back from her, which I have here. I came into program in 1990, and I wrote to her early in 96. And is that it?
1 minute.
1 minute. Okay. I'll do this quick. Let me see. Here we are. All right. It's been a long time since we talked. I'm not proud of how I behaved during our marriage, so if anything, I should be making amends to you. I think my actions were partially influenced by what I didn't know then, nor did you, that I have bipolar disease, formerly called manic depressive illness. I have a psychiatrist, lucky me. I found myself suicidal 2 years ago over nothing. So he confirmed what I had wondered about for years and years and years. So she goes on to say that she doesn't feel that I owe any amends whatsoever, and I was told by my sponsor that okay, that's where we let it go, you know. So I let it go, but the whole process was so healing for me. I mean, so healing, because it took away my grandiosity, if you will. It let me know that I wasn't all at fault. My transgressions were not that heathen. It was just a matter of not being that loving, so to speak. And I am so grateful for this program, which has allowed me to grow up and join the human race. And thank you for letting me be of service.
All right, now we will have Christiana, and she's going to share on our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
Hi, Christiana, compulsive overeater and director.
Hi, Christiana.
I'm really, really grateful to be here. I'm grateful for that break that we took, too, because I was crying in my seat and I was thinking that I was about to go up. And it's just like times like these that remind me how much program means to me and how far I've come. I say I have, like, a horrible memory. Like, I mean, I guess that's like an addict trait. Why I was a compulsive overeater, I would forget the pain that I would feel, and I would continue to compulsive overeat. So just being here, and you know, that's why I go to meetings multiple times a week, just to remind myself. But my promise, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change, has definitely come true for me. And I sat in meetings for a year telling myself that I didn't deserve any of these promises. And that was, like, the biggest thing to overcome, is that, like, I am worthy of having these happen for me. And all I needed to do was toward the tools and the program, and it absolutely, undoubtedly can come true for anyone. But my outlook and attitude before was like this bubble, and all that was in it was me, how I was feeling, what I wanted, how skinny I was, how fat I was, me. And I really didn't see much else. And I had like two attitudes. It was, this is the best day ever because I'm starving myself today and this feels awesome. Or this is the worst day ever because I can't stop binging and I don't know why I can't stop eating this food. So that's really like all my attitudes were. It's one or the other. And after I'm 19 now, I came into program when I was 16, 17-ish. And after, you know, struggling for like a year, I got abstinent on January 15th. So I'm, you know, almost have like 11 months. And through this time, like the promises started coming true on that day that I got abstinent. Like every single day has just been inching away at getting more and more towards like this full freedom. And now the attitude and outlook I have, which is still like a struggle for me because I'm such an isolator, is to expand my bubble and to let you guys into my bubble. And that's still so painful for me. I have a best friend in program and we call each other every single day. And I remember, I just told her this yesterday, like, I remember the day that it was like, okay, this person's in my life. And that day was like so painful for me, just like so weird. I don't want anyone in my bubble. But I'm grateful, like that's what this program has allowed me to do, is to share my life and to see that it's not all about me. And this program just really helps with my ego, and it's definitely not perfect. I wanted to share, before getting abstinent, I was practicing a religion, and it wasn't working for me because I wanted to do it alone. And I'll never forget, I was sitting on my, probably eating some food, sitting on the carpet, reading this, like, dictionary of, like, all the different forms of this religion, because there's so many different forms, and I was trying to find the one that said, do this alone. I literally was looking for the one that said, you don't have to talk to anyone, and I couldn't find that one, and I was so upset. And every single definition of this religion was the word community, and that just pissed me off so much, and that really wasn't working. Still sometimes it's hard to pick up the phone, but the phone is the biggest tool for me. And coming to meetings and to just make connection. I can look people in the eyes today. And if I can't look you in the eyes, it means something funky is going on with me. I'm really, really grateful for everything that this program has done for me. And I'm on my ninth step. So the first person I made amends to was my dad, and I just got to apologize to him for, you know, the family's about me. Don't you know I'm the queen diva of this family? You know, I'm the youngest one in my entire family, even out of, like, all my cousins. And it's just, I'm the baby. I'm the beautiful diva princess Christiana. Like, don't you know? We're going to go on vacation where I want to go on vacation. So I got to just apologize, you know, for that. And, of course, I just broke out crying. In my amends to him. One more minute. And him and I are so similar that he just, you know, he understood, and it's hard for him to be vulnerable too, so he just started doing all this chatting. But it was funny, and it was beautiful, and this ninth step is really teaching me how freeing honesty is, and I have some amends to make that, you know, coming forward, that are really brutally going to be honest for me, and I know I'm going to experience even more freedom. This program, just every single day, you can gain more and more freedom. So just for today, I'm in this program, and I'm grateful to be here. And as a college freshman, there's no place I'd rather be on my Saturday night than with all of you guys. I'm not kidding you. You're a lot nicer than, like, some teenagers are just mean. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I feel so old now.
Welcome.
Up next, we have Michael B., and he is going to share on fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us.
Hi, my name is Michael, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michael.
And I want to thank you, Carla, for asking me to come. I want to thank Christiana for sitting next to me and say hello to most people on the panel that I know. Hello, R. And anyway, I can remember in nursery school pretending that I was napping in our cot so that I wouldn't have to go out and play with the other kids. And that's how early my fear of people emanates from. And it's a disease of isolation, and we're all equal. I love the fact that there's a 19-year-old in this program. I call one of my daughters Queen Isabella. And I'm just grateful that I hopefully can stay a day at a time in this program if she ever needs it. So I wish I could tell you that I think the illusion that I have still is that the fear is going to leave me. And I wake up most mornings not wanting to get out of bed. And I've been doing this for 24 years. And I got a slew of people that call me early in the morning, starting at 5:10 in the morning. And we read the spiritual literature, you know, and sometimes we pray together and everything. And it ain't until I get out of bed and step into the shower that I start feeling a higher power's presence. Because faith without works is dead. And I can sit and proselytize and read all the spiritual literature in my warm bed, but I gotta get out and go to work. Now, I come from a place where I want somebody to take care of me. I didn't have a full-time job until I was 43 years old. Talk about not regretting the past. I'm kind of proud of that now. But only because, you know, God has worked with me. I have a career now that's going to be 20 years if they don't find out who I really am. And it's a service career, and it's intense, and I love it. But I love vacation even more. And this career allows me a lot of vacation. Economic insecurity. My wife, who, thank you very much, Christine, for coming with me tonight. She got outsourced 6 years ago in a job that she had worked for 34 years. It was like a family, and she had made a decision afterwards that 34 years was enough to work, and I didn't respect that. I got afraid because I have. Together, we are self-supporting through our own contributions, but we have three children as well. So the fear comes up a lot for me. And what had happened is that for 6 years, I've been the sole provider financially. And it feels good when I'm not in the fear. It really feels good. In the old days, they say you used to be able to do that. You used to be able to, you know, the wife could stay home and take care of the kids. And I guess we can do it today as well, a day at a time. My daughter, Isabella, just graduated from college. And I wanted her to live on campus for a few years, and she did. And it was real happy. We were real happy about it until we got the bill. And one of my big fears was calling the people and find out, you know, how much and how are we going to do it? My wife's not working. And I called on Friday. And it's doable, and I felt like $1 million because I talked to the person. The person was nice, amiable. I understand it now. The nature of my disease doesn't want me to understand. It wants me to anesthetize myself with food. I don't like to face life on life's terms because I'm a recovering chicken shit. And you know, that's the truth. But, you know, I've been with you guys for over a couple of decades now. I mean, I have a career. I have a wife. I have four children, a grandchild, one on the way, a child who's sober and Alcoholics Anonymous for seven years. My mother died in her early 40s in Camarillo State Hospital, keeled over from a heart attack, had shock treatment, had a lobotomy in the early 50s. My father died of cirrhosis of the liver. His father died of cirrhosis of the liver. My uncle committed suicide at the age of 30. My family is riddled with the disease, and there's a ray of hope, you know. And also when my son got sober in AA and is working the steps, it's just a miracle and it's a blessing. I want to read you something from a good book, if I can find it here. It says on page 68, notice the word fear is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, his wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And here's the crux. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play His role that He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. I get that conscious contact with God with you guys. I don't get it by myself, isolated. And I don't know about you, but matching a little calamity serenity sounds pretty good.
Next up, we have Jill, and she's going to share on who will intuitively know how to handle situations which is fabulous.
Hi, I'm Jill. I'm a compulsive overeater and a 100-pounder.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, buddy. What an order I can't go through with it. That's what I said every day before I came into program. What an order I can't go through with it. Order me up a pizza or two or three. Just to quickly qualify for the newcomers, this is so awkward. I came in at 327 pounds, and I'm maintaining 160-pound weight loss, and I say that only to offer you hope. And I invite you to step into the miracle of recovery tonight. And what else do I want to say? With God's grace, it'll be 8 years, December 26th. And always, always, always grateful and very humbled to be asked to be of service. And thank you. It's always a pleasure to participate in my recovery. So that being said, I was asked to lead on, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I'll just go ahead and read something that from the big book that is actually on page 85. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. And for me, my vital sixth sense, I call intuition, I call God's voice. So, that being said, I want to share an experience that I had with intuitively knowing how to handle situations that used to baffle me. I was had the opportunity to live in Paris for the month of this last March. Much of that time, 2 weeks was with my partner, and the other 2 weeks I was alone, and I speak very, very little French. So, and Paris, I've been there a number of times, and it's one of the most joyful places for me to be. So, part of that, my partner had left, and I decided that I was going to go to London for a couple of days, and in doing that, I packed up a fancy, expensive camera along with my laptop and my backpack and took a taxi to Gare du Nord, and which is a train station there, and was up by my train station. And I had my backpack just set at my feet. I had taken out my passport to complete some custom paperwork, turned for a second onto the counter, completing that paperwork, and I looked back down, and my backpack was gone and stolen. Now, here's the thing, and I intuitively knew how to handle a situation that used to baffle me. I knew right away that I needed to feel my feelings around this and my thoughts, or was it going to show up on my plate? So I stood there and sobbed at the train station, in the middle of the train station for a little while. A very kind woman guided me to, or took me to, the police station at the train station. Again, I speak no French, so here I am in this country. I have my passport. Thank God I still have my passport, literally. My stuff was stolen. So I called my partner, and it was after midnight in the States, and she intuitively knew what to do as well, and she called a fellow and a friend that spoke fluent French. She was able to get on the phone with the police. Long story short, I spent about 2 hours at the police station sobbing, again, because I knew I didn't want it to show up on my plate. I do the same things in Paris or wherever I am as I've learned to do in these rooms. So after I got that taken care of, went back to my apartment, cried for a long time, and then got into action, called the insurance company, called the laptop company where I purchased the laptop from, made arrangements to get my laptop turned off, and started going to meetings. Because I intuitively knew how to handle a situation that used to baffle me. And I leaned into God. And I leaned into God, and it made God bigger than the problem. Because that's what I know how to do. And that's what I know what to do. So, an intuitive voice said, you know, they may have stolen your stuff, but they're not going to steal your abstinence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of my character defects, I just wanted to pick up my toys and go home. All you French people suck. I hate it here. I'm just going to pick up everything and go home. But intuitive voice said, no, you're not. You're not going to let them steal Paris from you either. So went to meetings, called my sponsor, gave her my food, just that I'd done prior, and got to meetings early in Paris, raised my hand, was of service, just like I am here in the States. Again, I intuitively knew how to take care of myself. And every day I just asked for a different experience of Paris, and I remained humble and kept my eyes open and was available for that experience. So thank you for asking me to share.
All right, at least it was a happy song.
Our last speaker for tonight is Debbie, and she's going to share on We Will Suddenly Realize That God Is Doing For Us What We Could Not Do For Ourselves.
Hi, I'm Debbie, compulsive overeater and anorexic.
Hi, Debbie.
Wow, thank you everyone for sharing. I'm like I'm the last one to stand up to all these people. Let's see. God could do for me what I could not do for myself. I wouldn't be standing here. I would have been dead at 15 if I had my will. Mm-hmm. I had a very, as all of us have our stories, I had a very rough childhood, teenage, but I was, God definitely, I had many, many addictions, but binging was and starving was probably the last thing. And I remember passing out, waking up from a sugar coma, and at 23, and finding the OA hotline. I don't even know how, where I found the OA hotline, but I remember calling it and getting to my first meeting at Hill Street, which is still there on a Saturday, crying my eyes out because I heard my story and everybody, and getting, and someone coming up to me, and I was like, yes, you know, yeah, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And that definitely was not my will. I mean, God was totally taking care of me. And it was funny, when I came back into these rooms, I found higher power. I found a spirituality. Like, I was raised in religion, and I just hated God. You know, why would all these bad things happen to me if there was a God? I had 2 years of really working the program, went through many sponsors, and because I didn't understand the concept of, my sponsor is not my mom, my dad, my God. My sponsor is not everybody. And then I thought my first husband would be a great higher power, and that did not work out. And gratefully, I came back in 2000, and as you know, many people know me, I had a second marriage of 12 years, and the last 2 years has been the most challenging of going through. It was a divorce with dignity. I mean, being in program, I mean, it's amazing. I don't know really why God, you know, sometimes I'm like, hey, God, why do you want this? And then an aha moment happens, and it was like, oh, that's why I'm not supposed to be in this relationship anymore. That's why you've got me moving here, and I'm working here, and, you know, oh, that's why I took this job, so I could be around people and not be depressed and isolate. And, you know, and be around people that make me laugh and, like, help me get through this really hard time. And that's, like, what I've seen in my life the last 2 years. Right now I'm looking forward to see what God's going to do for me for Christmas. Because it's not about the food for me right now. It's about people and family. And that's been, like, the hardest thing with my divorce. But, you know, I made it through Thanksgiving. You know, I've learned in these rooms, my sponsor's like, where your feet are. That's all you got to do is right where your feet are. And I went back to school in the certification program. It's like a passion of mine that I've been certified before. But I was taking another program through UCLA. So I had to stop obsessing on men and online dating. So I'm like, okay, I need something positive to be thinking about. Also, every other week I wanted to quit school. So I'm like, this is too hard. I can't do it. And I go to my sponsor, she's like, no, you can do this, you can do this. Well, today, okay, I was ready to quit this class, what I had to do today. Okay, I am a visual artist, I am not a theater person. I wrote a letter to my teacher, I'm like, I can't do this, no. Well, lo and behold, I wrote a creative theater performance and did it today, and did all these role-playing performances. I mean, it's an 8-hour class today that I showed up for and did all of this. And I'm the only person in this class that is not in social work or therapy or, you know, they're all doing this kind of stuff. And I was just like, I called my sponsor, you know, I was driving home trying to rush so I can get here and just go, I did it. You know, it was like, that is God doing for me what I could never do for myself. I mean, the things that I can do now, you know, it's, I mean, definitely, I have bad days, you know, but like I tell my sponsors, like, it's going to feel like, it's not going to feel good, and then all of a sudden it gets better again, sometimes those can happen within an hour, 5 minutes, those moods can change, but when Deanna asked me to lead, I was all planning to go to a roller derby championship game tonight. Because people that know me know I used to play roller derby. I'm a huge roller derby fan. But she asked me, I go, okay, sure. I didn't think about it. I said, yep, I'll be there. Because I know that program is my foundation. If I did not have program in this last 2 years, it's like, oh my God, my first divorce, I ate 2 pints of ice cream a night to get through it. now I have to feel it, you know. And some nights, you know, and I've had to write a ninth step that I've been through steps many times, and this ninth step was just on me. And it was just like taking care of me and not letting, right now it's not having men fill that hole, you know, because I have like 11 and a half years of abstinence right now. And I've been in the rooms a long time, but and my abstinence is no binging, no starving, not leaving program, and not leaving the planet Earth. The planet Earth is a really tough one for me, but thank God for the support I have that I go to, you know, my sponsor, multiple fellows that I can, and I'll just wrap up that I can't be suicidal if I'm going to go be a service to my sponsee, you know. Okay, snap out of it, gotta go be a service. That is God taking care of me and God doing for me what I never could do for myself. So thank you all for being here.
At this time, we now ask ourselves, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. As the holiday season can be one of stress and concern for many, we would like to share with you a new vision for the holiday season, courtesy of Lifeline. Online subscription, $13, in the mail, $23. I've asked someone to read the 12 steps to a better holiday season, courtesy of Lifeline.
Hi, I'm Mary, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mary.
12 steps to a better holiday season. 1, we admitted the holiday season has a deeper meaning than devouring food. 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could help us see and celebrate the true meaning of the season. 3, we came to believe our higher power can help us appreciate the joyfulness of the season as we understand it. 4, we made a searching and thorough examination of our relationship with food during the holidays and other things we enjoy about the season. 5, we admitted to our higher power the exact nature of our food habits during holiday season past. 6, we became entirely ready to allow a higher power to remove our attachment to food as a necessary, as a necessity of the holidays. 7, we humbly asked him to remove our desire to partake of holiday treats. 8, we made a list of all persons whose presence makes the holiday season joyful for us and with whom we would like to share our joy. 9, we made plans to spend time with those people whenever possible, except when to do so would remove us from our primary purpose of abstinence. 10, we continued to enjoy the company of friends and family and other non-food aspects of the season. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our appreciation of the season, praying for knowledge of its meaning and the joy we feel at this time. 12, having realized that sharing the joy of the season with others far outlasts the fleeting pleasure of food, we gave ourselves the gift of abstinence throughout the holidays and gave others the gift of our full attention and appreciation.
Thank you. At this time, we'd like to thank our speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. And we would just ask that you dispose of all of your trash in the trash bins. If you could just blow out your candles and be so kind as to leave them on the table where you pick them up, that would be wonderful. And we just want to wish you all a happy holidays, and thank you again for coming out this evening. Yeah.